Greg Alcoholic. It's Friday date, it's October 27, 2008. This is my home group. I have a sponsor, and I'm available to sponsor others. I just spoke a couple weeks ago at Yana, and nothing's much changed since then, so if you heard it, I'm sorry. I spent like the last 3 weeks, I've been in Tampa like 3 days, so I've had like three meetings in the last 3 weeks, so I'm a little crazy right now, so you guys can enjoy that. I do like Yana better because there's like a table here, and there's like, so you guys can't see my legs shake, but I'll just get started. See, I grew up in Ohio, small town in Ohio, just a, you know, pretty normal family, you know, pretty, just about a little bit above middle income, you know, nothing really crazy happened. So mom and dad had pretty much had everything I needed and wanted. You know, mom and dad weren't very big drinkers at all. There were some in the outskirts of my family, aunts and uncles that are pretty heavy drinkers, but mom and dad never really saw them drink that much. Just a couple times. You could tell when my dad was drunk because he'd start smoking cigarettes, so I think I saw like 5 times in my life. So, you know, nothing there, really. You know, in my background it says I should be an alcoholic, but that's what I am. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here. Yeah, so, you know, growing up, it was good. I guess the biggest thing for me is I always felt less than growing up. If I walked into a room and I saw you guys, like a group huddled over here talking and laughing, I just assumed they were talking about me and it was negative and they were making fun of me. You know, just a negative self-perception of myself. And I'm, you know, the book says we're self-centered, so I always just assumed you're talking about me, no matter. You can be talking about the weather. It doesn't matter. You're talking about me, and it's negative. So, to combat that, I use humor. I was like the class clown. If I got you to laugh, then you know we were friends. It was cool. Like you liked me because you're laughing at my jokes or the stupid stuff that I do. You know, I was the type of guy that if you drank 6 drinks, I was going to drink 12. I just had to prove myself to everybody. I was kind of like the first guy. I was kind of like a chameleon. I try to fit in with everybody, you know, all the groups. I wanted to be okay with everybody. So no matter where I was or when it was, I was okay with whoever was around me. So I'd do anything to get your approval. You know, I didn't really start drinking. I mean, just the very beginning of my story has drug use. You know, it's just easier to get drugs as a 15-year-old than it is booze, especially when you look young. So, you know, the first time I ever used it was, you know, when a bunch of people, we went out rolling toilet paper, and I don't know if you guys are familiar with that. So, we smoked some weed before we went, and we just picked this girl's house, and it just so happened that her brother was a Marine, and he was home on leave, and he had brought friends home with him, and they weren't asleep when we started, so they didn't like that we were rolling their house, so they came out, and, you know, I got my butt kicked pretty good, and then I had, like, everybody scattered, so then I had to, like, run to my friend's house from where we were. So it was like a 2-mile run, and, you know, like, my stomach hurts and, like, on the verge of throwing up, and I get to my buddy's house, and, like the first thing out of my mouth was, like, when can we do that again? That was amazing. Like, can we do that tomorrow? You know, just the negative consequences right from the very beginning, but it didn't matter. The only thing I think of is when can we do that again? It was awesome, you know? The first time I drank, I think really I drank alcoholically right from the very beginning. I was like 16 years old. It was a school night. I waited till everybody went to bed. I put Dazed and Confused in the VCR, sat on the couch and drank tequila and Coke. And I just drank it until I threw up. It was awesome. You know what I'm saying? I learned how to mix better as I fine-tuned my drinking, but that's where it started, and that's kind of where it ended. Just about the same. I just drank until I threw up. It was great. It's glorious. So I had to lie to my mom the next day while there's throw up all over the back porch. I just said I was sick and couldn't make it to the bathroom and, you know, skip school. And, it didn't really change in high school, you know, because I didn't know what I was doing. So if you're an alcoholic like me, more is better. It doesn't matter what it is. You know, if it's alcohol or drugs, more is better. It doesn't matter what the substance is. It's just more. I need more. So I drank until I blacked out and threw up a lot, you know, pretty consistently in high school. So I didn't do it very often because every time I did it, I got caught. You know, I did stuff like pass out and hit a mailbox, driving down the road like 50 miles per hour, and just wake up with like five people in the car screaming mailbox as it goes through the windshield. You know? And I just like, to this day when I go by to where that happened, it's like a slope like this, there's a telephone pole like a foot away from the mailbox. I mean, it could have been, you know, but for the grace of God, right? I mean, it could have been, I mean, I had my brother and like three of my best friends in the car with me. You know, and I just, what we did there was just I waited, pulled down the end of the street, and we switched drivers, and we kept on going. You know, that's just craziness. But, you know, so I kind of did what the big books, I try to control and control my drinking by doing different things that they talk about. You know, my solution in high school was I won't drink Milwaukee's Best. Because every time I drink Milwaukee's Best, and if it's Milwaukee's Best Ice, I'm definitely getting in trouble. So let's just stay away from that. You know, I can drink like Bud Light or Natty Light and we'll be fine. And that was my solution in high school. You know, it didn't work very well, but you try different things as you go along. You know, I wasn't much for school. Like I said, if you're a class clown, you're not really paying attention to school, so my grades aren't that good. College really wasn't an option. I was sitting in class one day and they said, they came over to the speaker and PA and was like, you can go take the ASVAB if you want in the study hall. And I was like, well, I can get out of class and go do that, so let's do that. And, you know, that's the reason why I went to do it. But, it turned out I did well somehow, and I tested well on the ASVAB, so I had recruiters calling me, and I decided I would, you know, get away from my hometown. I mean, people join for different reasons, patriotic or want money for college. I joined because I wanted to stop doing drugs. And, I mean, it worked. You know, they gave me discipline, and there was drug tests and structure, so I was like, well, I can't do drugs. But the thing about the military is it's like a drinking fraternity. It's like, it's just like a fraternity in college. It's like a work hard, play hard kind of environment, so it's perfectly okay. As long as you can show up to work at 7:30 the next day, you can drink as hard as you want and do all kinds of crazy. Just don't get a DUI and show up at work. That's like your only avenue. I mean, if you can do that, you're good. And I was able to do that, luckily. But so I didn't get much trouble, but it was, you know, it was like in a dorm environment, but instead of like college dorm, it was like 18-year-olds. It was like, I had 18 to 24-year-olds, so getting alcohol was no longer a problem. You know, I could just walk to my neighbor and say, hey, can you give me some beer? And they'd be like, yeah. So, you know, quickly it started like a Friday, Saturday type thing, and then you're drinking Thursday to kick off the weekend, and then Wednesday to kick off Thursday, and it just kind of stretches out. And, you know, I'm like 150 pounds, drinking like a case of beer a night, you know, just living on 3 hours of sleep a night. I mean, I can't imagine doing it now, but at 18, I somehow did it. But, I mean, there's no consequences then, you know. I mean, I had nothing. I'm like 3,000 miles away from home, so I don't have to talk to my parents. Everybody in the dorms is drinking, so everything's okay. And then, you know, I met a girl, kind of, that moved kind of quickly. I mean, instant gratification. If it makes me feel good, I want more of it, you know. So she made me feel good. I met her in October, and, you know, she was pregnant in February. We got married in April. Just moving right along, you know. You know, so, I mean, and it worked out. I mean, I'm not married to her anymore, but I got a beautiful daughter, and, you know, I wouldn't really change how that went, but, you know, she met me when I was drinking one of the hardest points of my life. You know, it was like five nights a week. So I was like, why, you know, so she was cool with it at first. And then one night I got drunk and snuck some of her muscle relaxers and I blacked out. And then this is all like hearsay. So I assume it happened because she tells me it happened. But apparently that night in a blackout, she's laying on the bed on my futon because I don't even have a bed. It's a futon, real classy. She's laying on the bed on the futon pregnant, and you know, I'm like in a blackout, I'm punching the pillow beside her face, like freaking out. I have no idea what happened, but you know, so I woke up in the morning and you know, I was like, hey, what's going on? And she's like scared of me. I'm like, oh, that's not good. Something happened last night. And she told me what happened, and then all of a sudden she's not okay with me drinking anymore. So for the rest of that relationship, it was just kind of like a battle between me and her, my will and her will, on who was, you know, do I get a drink or do I not get a drink? My will was a drink and hers was not drink, you know. So it was a constant battle, and it just worked out that I would drink like once a month. I'd get real hammered. She'd be like, haven't you had enough? And I'd be like, are you kidding me? I haven't drank in a month. And, you know, and so, and then I'd black out, and then I'd get in a fight with her. And it's just, it always felt, like I said in the beginning, it's like I always feel less than. So if I feel less than, I want to make you feel less than. And so I just like belittled her, very, you know, verbally abusive when I was drinking, mostly towards her. You know, I mean, that's who took the brunt of, you know. I like to say, the book says we're like a tornado, and she's like a trailer park. You know, I just, boom, focused in on her. You know, I just destroyed her. That's the easiest way to say it. I mean, tornadoes always fun. But anyways, not that she was, anyways. oh, man, I hope she doesn't listen to this one. You know, I mean, that's just how it went. You know, I'd get drunk and do something stupid, and she wouldn't let me drink for a while, and then I'd wear her down, and then I'd get a drink, and then finally kind of came to a head. I woke up one morning, I went to play golf. It was like a work golf outing in the morning. I had, like, no intention whatsoever to drink. It was like a big day. It was actually the third Harry Potter came out that day, so I had, like, pre-bought tickets. You know, because I really like Harry Potter, so I like had it planned. You know, I pre-bought the ticket to go to this movie, and so I had no intention to drink. But I get to the golf course, and the first thing they do is hand me a beer, and I'm like, "Yes, that makes sense. We're on a golf course." So I drank all day at the golf course, but I still got to go to this movie theater and see this movie. So I drive out there. It's like I get there like 2 hours early, so I got an hour to kill because I want to make sure I'm in my seat before the movie starts. So I sit at Hard Rock, which is right next to the movie theater, and I quickly drink like six drinks in an hour, and then I remember leaving the Hard Rock, and then the next thing I remember, I'm standing up in the middle of the movie theater, that's opening night of Harry Potter, and it's just like full of kids, and I'm like dropping F-bombs at kids. You know what I'm saying? I don't know what happened, but that's how I came to. You know, and you know, the sheriffs are coming to get me out of the movie theater. So, they escort me out. They get, like, a standing ovation as I'm walking out. And I got my, like, souvenir shot glasses from Hard Rock, and I drop them, and they shatter. It was terrible. But, I'm sitting on the curb outside. I'm too drunk. I don't remember, like, my commander or my first sergeant. I can't even remember their names. So they call my wife, and so it's like a half an hour drive for her to come get me. So I'm like sitting on this curb, just pitiful, incomprehensible demoralization. So I'm like, I feel complete less than, and I know what's coming. So I'm just like, I'm just gonna attack her as soon as she gets here. I'm going in, and that's what happened. I shut the door and just laid into her because like I said, if I feel less than, I'm gonna make you feel worse than I do. And that went bad. She was pregnant again at this time. You know, she's like 3-4 months pregnant. That's the kind of guy I am when I'm drinking. But, we get back to the house, and I'm yelling at her, and I scare her. I'm yelling so bad that my daughter, she's like 4 at the time, jumps off the bed, hits her face, cuts it up. So she has to call my boss, and they come escort me out of the house, and I go to a friend's house, and I wake up in the morning, and I just, you all have that, you've all woken up with that feeling of just like, I did it again. You know what I'm saying? Just like, I never want to drink again. And that's the feeling I had. And I thought that's what was going to happen. And I told her, and I came back to the house, and I'm done drinking and whatever. And I went to a few AA meetings, and the first AA meeting I went, it was great. Like, I could feel the power that was in the rooms AA, and I could see that you guys had something. But I heard I heard this lady share about how she hid bottles in the house. And I was like, well, I didn't hide bottles. Or heard this guy say, I came home, my kid called me an effing drunk. And I was like, well, my kid doesn't do that. So, this is great for you guys. But, I still thought I had the power of choice when it came to drinking. And in reality, like, my ex-wife had the power of choice to not let me drink. And that's what it really boiled down to. But so I didn't go back to another meeting. I stayed dry for a year and a half, just like on her will, and this battle for me to be able to drink just took a year and a half this time instead of a month, is what it really was. And I was resentful for a year and a half. We fought and hated each other, and eventually she called me one day from Walmart, and she was, "Hey, what do you want to drink?" I was like, "Give me a 6-pack. Coors Light." And she said, "Okay." And I was like, "Yeah, we're back in business." That's literally what I thought. It was like, yes, it's game on again. And, You know, after a year and a half of not drinking, you think a six-pack would be, like, good, but it wasn't. Like, it just, that the craving had kicked in at this point, the obsession. I guess sometime in that year and a half, it really kind of, if it hadn't flipped before, I'd cross that invisible line. And once I drank that six-pack, you know, she caught me in the neighbor's cooler trying to steal more, and it just was, like, downhill quickly. Like, that was in May. By September, I'm out the house again, and at this time, you know, I called my grandma one night drinking, like my whole family, because I had just got kicked out of the house. So my whole family's calling me, and I tell my dad, he's like, I'm like, Dad, you know that guy at the end of the bar that's just sitting there with his head down, looking at his drink? Like, that's who I want to be. I mean, like, I aspired to be that guy, and he hung up on me, like immediately. And then, you know, my grandma calls. She's like, why are you drinking? Like, aren't you? I was like, aren't the kids the most important thing? Won't you do anything? I was like, yes, they're the most important thing. She's like, no, they're not. You just left them to drink. And, you know, but none of that had, like, any kind of power over me, you know. And I drank. And then eventually what happened, I went to Iraq. I had done something stupid again and sworn off booze again. And, I mean, every time I did it, I truly believed it. Like, I could take a lie detector test and I would have passed. Like, without a doubt, like, I truly believe I was never going to drink again. But if I don't replace it with something else, then I'm an alcoholic. My default is to drink. If I don't have something else there, I'm going to drink. So, you know, that's what I did for 5 months in Iraq, and I didn't drink the whole time. The whole time I'm saying I'm done drinking. The first place we land in America is Bangor, Maine. It was a Sunday morning, like 9 o'clock, and they open up the bar, and I'm drunk. You know, the first opportunity I had to drink, I drank. And that was in May, and the obsession was so bad. Like, if I wasn't drinking, I was thinking about when I was drinking. If I was drinking, I was thinking about when I was going to drink next. You know, at the end of the night, I had to go get my booze for the next day. Even though I had to pass the gas station like 3 times on the way to work, you know, I had to get my booze. So, I was driving drunk. I was eating Ambien on top of drinking. It was just, you know, craziness. You know, I was getting IVs at work. My boss is walking in. I got IV in my arm. You know, it's just training for these guys. No big deal, sir. You know, it just was craziness. You know, I was thinking about this the other day. Like, this is like the epitome of my drinking towards the end. Like, I woke up, and I was like, my pants were down around my ankles. I'm like half in my bedroom, half in my bathroom. There's like a trail of vomit from the bed to the bathroom. And I'm like the last thing I remember is leaving the club. Like, I don't even remember. The last thing I remember is dancing at the club. You know what I'm saying? I don't even remember leaving the club. And I share that because even though I woke up like that, in a blackout, I was trying to fight the guy that drove me home because he wouldn't stop to get more booze. You know what I'm saying? I woke up like that, and I wanted to fight the guy driving me home because he wouldn't stop and give me more drinks. I mean, that's how I drank. It just, there was no off switch. You know, and in that moment, like when I first came in, I heard the saying, one is too many, a thousand is never enough. And I was like, first drink gets you drunk. And I was like, that's just so stupid. But when I came back, I completely understood that. Because if I have one, there's no stopping me. You know? So I completely understand it so much. I got it tattooed on my arm. So it's a constant reminder. It's right there, you know. But, you know, what ended up happening, I went out one Saturday night, and it was like I had done like a bender like the week before, and I had sworn booze off for a month. I made it a week. It was a Saturday night, and I went out and drank. I woke up Sunday morning, or came to Sunday morning. I'm sitting at my computer. I got a bottle of vodka. Once again, I have no idea how I got home. I'm just drinking. I'm chatting on the adult friend finder, trying to find a friend. You know, you know, it's real lonely. I mean, that's just at the end. That's what it was. I was just like, it's incomprehensible. Like, I'm like screaming to my therapist, I'm so alone. But then I don't want anybody to hang out with me. You know what I'm saying? It's really weird. But I wanted to die, but didn't have the courage to kill myself. I mean, that's the bottom for me. There's no physical bottom. I mean, I had just been promoted at work. You know, on the outside, things were looking good. You know, I was single again. You know, I just got promoted. You know, I mean, because that's what happened. My wife told me, you got to quit drinking or I'm leaving. I said goodbye. You know, you're getting in my way of my drinking. So yeah, so I'm sitting there, and this girl, I don't know, some random girl, and she's like telling me how she has two kids, and I'm like, well, what happened to the dad? And she's like, he'd rather party than be with his kids. And just this random person on the random internet chatting, and it was just like, whoosh, slap in the face. Like, just the moment of clarity, and in that moment, you know, I had no idea what to do. There was just so much internal pain. I had to feel something real, so I was cutting. But I coward cut, so I called my ex-wife. Hey, I'm cutting. Like, right now, I'm cutting. She's sneaky, so she hangs up, you know, she keeps me on the house phone and calls the police with the cell phone. I didn't even think you could do that, but she did it. So, you know, the next thing I know, the sheriff's at the door, and they're taking me out, and they're handcuffing me. And this is how crazy I am. They're escorting me out of the sheriffs are escorting me out of my apartment. I was like, I'm going to have so much street cred when I get back. Like, that's what's going through my head. That's how crazy I am. Like, I'm so hard now. You know, it's just, but, you know, I was so drunk. I was in Florida. I would have bet you $1 million I was in Ohio. I had no clue where I was. You know, they laid me down in the ER. She's like, have you been drinking? I just laughed at her. You know, it just, can't you smell the vodka? Like, I can smell it. But, you know, I went to the psych ward, and the doctor in the psych ward was like, I think you should probably go to rehab. And, you know, of course I balked at first, but I went back to my room, and I said a little prayer. And for the first time, you know, from almost the first time I ever drank or used, people had been telling me, you got a problem, you know, and nothing ever registered, you know, from the very beginning. And for the first time, as I sat in that, you know, in that psych ward, I was like, I don't even want to drink anymore. Like, I'm drinking, I don't even want to drink. I know if I leave here today without getting help, I'll drink, and I'll probably do it the day I leave. You know, and I just was like, okay, let's go. So, you know, I told her I'd go to rehab. You know, I extended it out. I got Baker acted. It was supposed to be like 72 hours. I ended up in the psych ward for eight days. But there was a nice bipolar stripper who was coming down off a manic. And I was like, well, I'll hang out with you for sure. You know what I'm saying? Let's hang. So I stayed, you know, six extra days in the psych ward just to hang. And it was fantastic. It was like I was getting paid at work still. It was like, there's a girl. Why not? It made perfect sense. Lucky. And then she would come. She visited me in rehab. Real nice girl. but that obviously didn't work out. Thank God. So, you know. And I just did what they told me to do for the most part. I started going to meetings. I did the 90 and 90. Like, the only thing I didn't do right away was get a sponsor. And that's like the only thing you should do right away. You know, I didn't do it just completely out of fear. It was just 100% fear-based. I was afraid he would say no or, you know, laugh in my face and, you know, tell all the other AA people that this guy just asked me and I told him no. Got him. You know, that's what I, in my head, I didn't realize that people like fight over sponsees. Like, oh, this one's mine. I got him. You know what I'm saying? I didn't even see that. It's different, you know, that's how it is if you're new and you're scared to get a sponsor. But so I was like 3 months in, I went to another fellowship and I sat in that meeting for like an hour and I was like, oh God, I got to get a sponsor like right away. So I had the guy picked out. I went to his home group on a Friday night, and I was like, I'm going to ask him before the meeting. And then I got to the meeting. I was like, all right, as soon as this meeting's over, I'm going to ask him. And then after the meeting, I was like, okay, next week I am definitely going to ask him. And I went outside to smoke a cigarette, and, you know, I was out there smoking. Some random guy asked me, he's like, hey, man, you got a sponsor? And as he's asking me this, the guy who I want to ask to sponsor me walks up, puts his arm around me. As I say no, that guy's like, well, you got one now. I mean, so right away, God did for me what I couldn't do for me. Because, I honestly don't know if I would ever ask. You know, I was just so much fear, I don't know if I would ever ask. You know, because I knew if I asked, he might say no. And then if he said yes, then I was going to have to do the fourth step. You know, that's where my head was. You know, just so fearful of that I got a lot of time. All right. Yeah, so God did for me what I couldn't do right away, you know, so there was no questioning my higher power. I saw him working in my life from the very beginning. I got sober at a little bit smaller in Tampa. Tampa is great. It's wonderful down here. So many meeting opportunities, so many people where I got was a lot sober. There was like six young people, and we just kind of hung out. And, you know, we hung together, and we did our thing and went to different meetings. And, I mean, it was not uncommon for me to do a round trip 100 miles to go to a meeting on a Sunday night. You know, there's so many meetings here. Don't take them for granted. But that's just what we had to do, you know. I put like 50,000 miles on my car that first year, just driving to different meetings. I got lucky. My first home group, it was, you know, it's a small town, but it's an hour and a half meeting. It was a podium meeting, so when you got called on the share, you came up to the podium, shared. And then the sobriety there was like a guy that had 45 years. His wife had 30. I went back about a year and a half ago, and it was a celebrants meeting. And so when we get up, you come to the podium, you share a sobriety date in your home group. And it was an hour and a half meeting, and there was only one person that shared that was less than 10 years. It was just incredible environment to get sober. So that's why I just hung out there. And then I ended up getting deployed again. I went to Iraq for 6.5 months. I went over there. Did like a meeting a week, just kind of a meeting. It was me and another guy. We get together and kind of talk and, you know, share what's going on. And then, you know, when I came back, you know, I got a new girlfriend, and, you know, I didn't really get back into AA. I was doing like a show up right as the meeting started, left right when it was over, and just kind of got farther and farther away. And then I moved down here, which is funny to me because when I first got sober, I was like, I'm going to give you guys 2 years. You know, I'll give you 2 years. I'll do what you say to do, and I'll give you 2 years, and if it doesn't work, in 2 years I'm going to get orders, and I'm going to have to move. And then I can drink, no one's going to know me down there, and I'll drink, and, you know, I'll have like a little bit of time before it catches up to me. And, so it doesn't matter why you show up. I just did what you guys told me to do, and I'm still here now, almost 5 years later. But, so I moved down here, and, you know, it's a new place. I don't really get involved. I just kind of on the outskirts, like I said, meet a few people, but don't really get any numbers, don't really call anybody. And then, you know, life happens. You know, I got dumped. My higher power moved to Philly. I don't know what to do, you know what I'm saying? So I started hanging again. A lot of time on Terry's couch crying. It's at a place, I like this story because, you know, I've been in Tampa for almost a year, and I knew faces of a bunch of people. I'm at my pool in my condo, and friends of mine are having a party. They're friends of mine now. I didn't really know them that well then, but, you know, because there's like 25 people in AA in the same pool as me. Like, I'm on this side, they're on that side. So all I had to do was swim over. But, like, I knew all of their faces, but I couldn't, like, move to that side of the pool to say hi. I was, like, so fear-ridden that these people were going to judge me or not know me that I couldn't go over and just say, hey, I'm Greg. Yeah, I know most of you guys. But I just couldn't do it. But, you know, that forced me into action. And, when I first got sober, like, I was not a big phone caller. Like, I try to do it, and I ebb and flow at it now. But it's helped me so much. You know, when I first got sober, people would call me, and I'd get pissed. You're calling. I'm watching Law and Order right now. Why are you calling me? So I'd answer the phone like, what? You know what I'm saying? Complete, just a jerk, you know. But now, AA asks me to do stuff all the time, and I just do it. That's what I. When I work with others, I just. For me, AA is just doing a bunch of stuff you don't want to do. You just do it anyways, you know, because eventually someone's going to do something for you that they don't want to do either. You know, that's just how it works. And I do stuff like I go to detox, and, you know, there's a couple people in here tonight that I've seen in detox or at rehabs, you know, and I took one guy, I've met him in a detox, and then I took him to speak at the detox the day he got his 90-day chip. You know what I'm saying? That's just, and every time I go to detox, I'm like, man, I don't want to go to detox. And then every time I'm leaving, like, man, I'm glad I went to detox. You know, whether it be just because I actually get to leave or just, I don't know, service work or whatever, but I always feel better when I get done. Getting involved, you know, it kind of, sometimes I think you suffer, you don't see it, and you don't know why. But in this case, I know why. Like, because December 15th of this past year, I was actually at the dealership, and my ex-wife calls me and says, your daughter's sick. I think you need to come back up. And So they were living in Pensacola, and I drove back up, and by the time I got there, she was in the ICU, she was special needs, so she kind of, her body just shut down, and it was pretty hard to see, but, I was able to be there for her, for my other daughter, for my ex-wife, on December 20th, she took her last breath. I was holding her when she took her last breath, what do you do there? You know what I'm saying? I left the hospital at like 3 o'clock that morning, and at noon I was in a meeting. Because I don't know what else to do, And the people at the meeting, they don't, and that's why home group's important, because they just show up for you when stuff like this happens. I have four guys in the room tonight, three guys and a girl, and they drove up to Pensacola, 7 hours one way, took me to a meeting, took me to dinner, and then drove home, 7 hours. We just show up for each other. And none of them knew what to say. They were just there to love me, hug me, just to be around me. That's what your home group's going to do for you, but I was able to be there. This is the same guy who, when her mom was pregnant with her, I was yelling at her mom so bad that the other kid jumped off the bed and hit her face. That's who I am if I'm drinking. But I was able to be there. I called her mom for like 2 months, like every day for like 2 months, trying to make amends, because I came back to y'all. She doesn't have what I have in AA. She doesn't have, a sponsor to talk to, or, Pigeon Brothers, or just friends, She doesn't have that. So I talked, I was there for her, made my amends to her that way. I still have my moments with that, Most days go by, I think about her most days, and I pray to her a lot. I was glad I could be there for sure, because if I was drinking, even not drinking, I was so selfish that I got to drive all the way to Pensacola. If I was drinking, there's no way I was making it up there. No way. And then I would have been drinking more, because I would never have been able to forgive myself for not being there. Then this year's been great. I just got back from, a bunch of us went out to Vegas for Dave and Kitty's wedding, hung out in Vegas, and none of us drank. And we gambled. I chewed tobacco. It was fantastic. I loved it. Every bit of it. It was an exhausting trip, though. It was great. 15 or so sober people out in AA just tearing it up, having a blast. That's what I like to do in sobriety, because, if sobriety is just sitting in my house watching Law and Order, then I don't want it. I want to be out and hanging. And this summer, I went home this summer, and I got to make amends, direct amends to my mom and dad, brother and sister. And I just shared this because, it really affected my sister. So right before I went home, my ex-wife had went to you can take this for what it's worth. It's just, I'm not like preaching like this is real life or not, but it affected my ex-wife, affected me, affected some of the people in my family. But my ex-wife went to a medium, and the medium picked my ex-wife randomly out of the crowd and was like, she said, "Tell the girl with the blonde hair whose face is sick that she's okay." That's what the medium said to my daughter. Told my wife, ex-wife, and my ex-wife didn't even realize my sister had been in the hospital for 4 or 5 days with a severe sinus infection, and she has blonde hair. So when I told my sister this, when I went and I was making my direct amends to her, and I told my sister this, and my sister broke down. She's like, I was praying to Savannah, that's who she'd been praying to when she was in the hospital. So, being able to tell her that, and, it meant a lot to me, it meant a lot to her. It just was good. And I guess I'm kind of running out of steam, but I'm really happy to be sober today. I see so many people in this room that are family to me. Thanks, Mark, for asking me. Is he here? He's in the back. Oh, there he is. Thanks, Mark, for asking me to share. I was going to say, man, if you weren't here, you missed it, bro. All right, but thanks, Mark, for letting me share at the home group. Asked me to share. I appreciate it. And thanks. Have a good night.